The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Saver Card. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, 2% at grocery stores, and 1% on all other purchases.
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
It's been assumed, it's been said, that baseball will take place in 2020. At a minimum, there will be some 48, 50 games. The owners will ultimately, unilaterally, move forward with that until this moment right now. Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred just said he is not 100% confident baseball will take place in 2020. What's changed? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can join the conversation at 888-729-3776 on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. In a conversation with Mike Greenberg, which airs tonight on ESPN's The Return of Sports special, Manfred has walked back comments he made last Wednesday, where he said unequivocally, we're going to play baseball this year. And he pegged the likelihood at 100% at that time. But according to reports, he just told Mike Greenberg that he is now not 100% confident they will have baseball in 2020. Let's discuss this with ESPN Major League Baseball insider Tim Kirkchin, who's on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. What's up, Tim?
How you doing, Will?
I'm okay. So you hear this, I'm sure not much before I heard it. What has changed in how many days we talk about here? 4 or 5 days time that has made Manfred lose confidence?
Well, first off, I haven't been 100% certain of anything since the middle of March, and no one else should have been because this is still a very fluid situation. The union, whether you agree with them or not, with it or not, stepped forward the other day and said, we're holding ground here and we're not going to negotiate anymore. I'm not sure all the owners felt that was going to happen. I think some of the owners felt like we can divide them. We might even break the union. And now, to me at least, that is not going to happen. Plus, the country's not really doing very well with COVID right now. There are spikes here and there. We haven't even gotten to the health issue here. If we could ever get through the money, is everything in place for baseball to be played this year? From a health standpoint, the answer is no. We don't know that yet either. So I still think we're going to play this year. But when the commissioner, who's been 100% about this, not just from last week, but from a month and a half ago, is now saying this, then we really have to pay attention.
You know, this idea of the owner's proposal, I can't remember, Tim, were they at 48 games, 50 games for 100% prorated salary over that, whatever the number of games was? It was sort of like the owner's fallback option. They thought they had the agreement in place from March where they could do that. Do you think this is the owners and Manfred now waffling on that? Like, hey, we don't really even want to do 48. We're not as committed to that.
I don't think that's the case. I've been told all along that there are some owners who think they're better off not playing at all. If they play 48 games and they and with full 100% prorated salaries, that's less than a third of what they have to pay the players. If they get through the postseason without any issues, in theory, they could make an enormous amount of money. So I've had people telling me for a month now, 60 games, full postseason, owners will do okay by that. So I don't think they're saying this is not going to work. But they are now looking at the players who are clearly disgruntled, but are saying, just tell us where to go, we'll show up and play. But it's not exactly a harmonious situation, which is why an agreement is needed. Maybe the commissioner looks at this and says, this is not what we wanted to do to implement, because implementing is not a good situation. It's just the last resort.
ESPN Major League Baseball insider Tim Kirkchin here on the Will Cain Show. So, Tim, if I open up my social media, and who cares about social media? I think anybody can kind of ascertain this or come to this conclusion. If baseball misses a 2020 season, if baseball doesn't come back in this environment, I mean, there are going to be people everywhere saying, oh, it'll never recover. It'll do permanent damage to the sport. A, do you believe that? And B, do you think that the players and owners realize that then? This could really set back your fans' attachment to the sport.
All right, if there's no 2020 season and it's not health-related, meaning the union and the owners couldn't get it together to play a season and the NBA, NHL, and football plays, that's going to do enormous harm to baseball. But baseball has survived wars and strikes and steroids and sign stealing, and it always survives because it's such a great game. But this is different. The country is in big trouble right now. Baseball has often been what pulls the country out of trouble to some degree. Instead, baseball is making it worse. Do I think no one's going to come back and watch if there's no 2020 season? No, I'm not buying that. But I don't think the owners and the players truly understand the damage and the danger of a work stoppage, which it basically would be. Will, I covered the 81 strike. That was vicious. It was awful. And there were people said, you're not going to recover from this. And then 94, when we lost the World Series, well, it took 5 years to really come back from that. Cal Ripken, home runs, everything else. Mm-hmm. So it's going to take a long time to recover from this if there's no season. And there could have been a season if they could have just worked it out financially.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's not really an analysis of whether or not everyone stops watching baseball, right? But how much, what percentage of your audience does not return? And I don't know, you know, I'm only one person, and my anecdote is just an anecdote. But, you know, I was a burgeoning hockey fan, Tim, in the early 2000s, in the late 90s. My local team, the Dallas Stars, were good. I got into it. I really liked it. Then the strike came. What was it, 04? I never really came back, not with any level of passion that I had before. And so I think the analysis is, what do you lose there? Like, what do you lose at the margins or even big chunks of your fan base? Not all of it, obviously, but
right.
You know, as
you
a percentage, what do you keep eating into?
Right. You lose chunks, and this is not a time to lose anything, given that baseball has slipped in popularity the last few years anyway. Revenues are down slightly, attendance is down, ratings are down, and the game is not as good a game as it was, in my mind, even 20 years ago. The game was played better back then than it is today, even though the players are bigger, stronger, faster, and better than ever. So given that, and now you're going to have bickering over finances that could, in theory, cancel a season while the NBA is growing, NHL is growing seemingly, and football is enormous and seemingly always will be. This is not a good time for baseball to have the squabble that it's having right now.
ESPN Major League Baseball insider Tim Kirchin here on the Will Cain Show. Hey, you just said this, revenue's going down. So I don't know that anybody knows this answer because the books are almost impossible to get into and understand. But I've been having the conversation today asking fans, who are you more sympathetic with in this debate, the players or the owners? And I got, Tim, to own my own bias, I've owned some small businesses, and, you know, the idea of operating in the red is not attractive to anybody. I understand these owners are billionaires, but if I set aside, I'm curious about this, if I set aside asset value, so the valuation of the franchise going up, just on a year-to-year basis, do they make money? We hear the Cardinals owner, the Cubs owner, a lot of guys saying, hey, you know, I don't make a bunch of money doing this as it is. Is that, I feel like we've had numerous owners kind of say that. In your, I don't know what you've seen behind the scenes as far as books. Is that posturing, or is that an economic reality of a year-to-year profit and loss statement for a baseball owner?
All right. I think it's posturing more than anything. I've been told there are some fragile franchises out there, and I would believe that if they're going to lose enormous amounts of money this year. I'm just not buying that it's the Cubs and the Cardinals. Now, is the cash flow what we thought it would be this year? Of course not. But the value of the team continues to go up every year. And even though you will lose money this year, you, in theory, if everything's done well next year, you'll make up a lot of that. So I have trouble being compassionate to owners who are having a really bad year financially, like so many other businesses in this country. They're going to have to bite the bullet and say, all right, we're not doing very well this year, but our value of our franchise is exceptionally high. And, Will, when I say the finances are going down, I mean revenue is going down just a tiny bit. This has been an exceptionally healthy sport for at least 10 years now. So if you have 10 really good years on the whole, and then you have a bad year like this, you're just going to have to deal with that as an owner, as difficult as it might be.
All right, ESPN Major League Baseball insider Tim Kirchen here on The Will Cain Show. Tim, really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. See you.
Okay, take care. Charles Barkley this morning brought up a point on ESPN that I brought up several times. Look, with the rate the way things are going, silence is violence. If you're not with us, I think Michael Bennett tweeted something, if, you know, essentially, if your politics aren't the same as ours, you're against, you're not against racism or something like that. I don't know. I'll get his exact tweet coming up. But the point is, if the line keeps moving, I've asked, hey, what if an NFL player declines to kneel? Will he be maligned for declining to kneel? Charles Barkley brought that up today on Get Up. I'm going to play you that sound and ask you what's canceled next on The Will Cain Show.
This is The Will Cain Show.
This need to be off the air. You a creep.
Snoop Dogg's a fan.
Yeah, you. So dumb. Weirdo.
Are you? Stay right here and you will be.
Devil.
More coming up.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
In a matter of weeks, society has taken an issue with almost universal agreement, universal condemnation about the events that unfolded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and has spun off in millions of directions. Now, when asked, what is the end game? By Stephen A. Smith on ESPN this morning, the answer has come back from across the sports world. Everything, including the eyes of Texas. I'll get to the Texas alma mater in just a moment here on The Will Cain Show. But if you missed any of our long-form interviews, go check them out on demand. The Will Cain Podcast brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. When you're unlimited double miles on every purchase, your next trip is closer than you think. What's in your wallet? The number of things that have fallen under scrutiny and cancellation in society are expanding by the minute. Firings, requests to retire, traditions, songs, and people. And here is your latest. After a photo of Oklahoma State head coach Mike Gundy was posted on Facebook in which he was wearing a OAN t-shirt. OAN is a news network extremely friendly to President Trump. After there was a photo of Mike Gundy wearing this OAN t-shirt, Chuba Hubbard, the nation's leading rusher last season, tweeted that, quote, he won't be doing anything for Oklahoma State until things change. I will not stand for this, Hubbard posted. This is completely insensitive to everything going on in society, and it's unacceptable. To that, senior linebacker Eamon Ogbonbaminga, forgive me, it's the first time I've ever said that last name, and former Oklahoma State players Justice Hill of the Baltimore Ravens and Cleveland Browns corner A.J. Green quickly tweeted their support for Hubbard. Also, an Oklahoma State offensive lineman has tweeted he also supports Chuba Hubbard. Oklahoma State says it has no comment at this time. Players were scheduled to begin workouts Monday at the university. Now, here's what's going on. So, is it about the t-shirt? Many are online saying it's about more than the t-shirt. These players are alluding to deeper problems within that program. Whether or not that's true, that's going to have to wait to be seen. For now, if it's about a t-shirt, what we're doing is falling in line with every single thing that doesn't follow what we believe in lockstep has to be coming in for cancellation. And I think the best example of this, to me, is the University of Texas's alma mater, the Eyes of Texas, which are among the demands requested by players at that university to be retired. In the first hour of the show, I went through the history of that song. It's very, very weak argument to be made as to why that song has quote-unquote racist undertones. It amounts to proximity and adjacent to things in history that are a part of our ugly past, but the song itself not literally nor directly connected to our country's racist history. And yet that song has to be canceled as well. And if that's the case, then anything and everything that goes beyond, you know what, you want to be real, goes beyond probably 10 years worth of history. Think I'm being crazy? No. Anything, I would say, you know what, it's less than that. Because 3 years ago, if Drew Brees had said what he said about the national anthem, then he would have been fine. But 3 years later, he says that, and he's up for cancellation. So anything that is more than about 2 months old is probably loosely adjacent to something and therefore cancelable. Armani in Florida thinks I'm getting the Eyes of Texas thing wrong. You there, Armani?
Yes, sir. How you doing, Will?
I'm good.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Look, just want to correct your history on the song. It's more than proximity and adjacency. So real quick, 3 points. The song was adopted as a school song in 1920. So was it originally written as a school song? And it had been sung on campus for 17 years before being adopted as the official school song. Number two, the gentleman who had the lyrics written, Lewis Johnson, was the director of the minstrel show on campus. So it was written specifically to be performed at the minstrel shows on campus, which, as we know, often showcased racist songs. Number three, the original tune was the Levy song, which was a demeaning racist song. If I read the lyrics to you right now, you would have to have me bleeped, right? The lyrics later changed to I've Been Working on the Railroad because, as you know, it was common practice in our history to replace the lyrics of well-known racist songs with, you know, nicer words. You know, people knew what they meant. You can kind of sing it with a little smirk knowing what they meant. So I just wanted to be clear. Again, the question of whether it should be removed or not is another question. But let's just get the history straight, because the way you articulated it, even I was like, wow, I don't even know why these kids would be angry about the song. But the
okay.
reality is...
a couple of things, Monty. You have listened to your 3 points. You can stay on the line.
Yes.
None of those are a surprise to me. I've read every single argument against this. I don't remember the exact order, but I'll go through your points. The I've Been Working on the Railroad song, which the Eyes of Texas was adopted to the tune of I've Been Working on the Railroad, is suggested to have some connections to the Levy song. Even if that's the case, Amani, now you're talking about 3 degrees of removal. So a song sung in the 1800s, early 1800s at this point now, called the Levy song, that you told me just now was out, which I've never seen or the lyrics of, by the way, which I'm going to take your word for it, out and out racist, is then changed to benign song, I've Been Working on the Railroad, which you see nefarious in that, and I think other people can see progress in that, unless you're saying the exact tune itself carries racist intention, meaning the melody. I've Been Working on the Railroad, which children sing to this day. That then is adopted one more time, so we're going a third time now, to the Eyes of Texas. And because of that, the song is nefarious and has racial undertones. How many degrees of separation does something have to, or is it no degrees? If you can draw back however many degrees you want to something in the past, that is objectively, in this case, I'm going to grant you the original Levy song. I'm unfamiliar with the words and all that, but I believe you. So we go back 3 degrees and that indicts the song. Number two, I don't know that the point that you make about the band director who, I believe is the band director, who wrote the song for the university president, that he did it for the minstrel shows or debuted them at the minstrel shows. I don't know the truth on that, but I don't know that it matters because the song itself isn't connected. It's debuted there. It's played there. That doesn't make the song itself racist. But I don't think I'm wrong when I start using words like adjacent and proximity. Because even the case you make, Amani, I mean, it's like next to, at the same time as, 3 degrees of separation from. Do you realize everything could fall under that purview? Everything. And I think the most important thing, I'm going to go back to you, Amani, the most important thing is this. Even after all that, do you believe it has anything? Like, when anybody sings that song, anybody knows of, much less means anything nefarious or ugly when that happens today? You think that's, do you think that happens?
Oh, you want me to answer that?
I do.
No, I don't necessarily believe that, Will. But see, again, that's not the point I'm making, right? The point I'm making, and we can, if you take some time and look at the history, I know you've done, you know,
I have.
Some
I read about it all
it,
weekend, I promise.
Exactly. So, the point I'm making is when the song was written, it was the song, not the Levee song, not On the Railroad. When the I forget what it's called now, the Eyes of Texas, was written, it was literally written to be showcased as a song at a minstrel show, a racist minstrel show. It was written for that explicit purpose, and then it was performed on campus, right? Because they actually, University of Texas actually had, in the same way I went to, you know, schools where we had the Folly show, they actually had minstrel shows, and it was sung
It was written without a doubt.
Yes, sir. So all I'm saying is you have to understand why people might be upset. It was written specifically for a racist minstrel show. It was sung on campus at the minstrel shows for 17 years. And then it was adopted as a school song. So the song itself, it's not about being adjacent. It was written as a racist song, Will.
Yes, no, it wasn't written. No. That was a sleight of hand. It wasn't written as a racist song. It was not. Which, a case you just made was, it was played at a racist.
No. It was written for the, sorry to interrupt. It was written for the sole purpose, right?
It was written too. It was written for the president and debuted at that. The point is, in the end, look, we're going to fight about that. I'm not going to concede. We could keep going on it. That's why I'm going to end it. But I appreciate Amani. I appreciate the call. But I would ask you this as well in the end. Even if everything you said is true, and I would debate you on a lot of that historical accuracy, but even if you said it was true, if you can make the argument that, for example, the circle game, which was a benign symbol, the OK symbol, for decades, can be co-opted by white supremacists and turn into a malignant symbol, so that anytime we see a picture of anyone online doing the OK symbol or playing the circle game, that we say that is an example of white supremacy. If that benign symbol can be co-opted and turned into something that it never intentionally meant, what I would ask you is, can't that also work in reverse? Even if your history was right, and we're kind of debating small details at this point over intention of the song when it debuted, but even if your history was right, wouldn't half a century of good intentions with that song also be capable of being co-opted? If something can become malignant, can't it not just become benign but revered? It seems to have to work both ways. Otherwise, it's not a true search for justice. It's just a power grab. I'll keep having this conversation, plus what Charles Barkley said about the national anthem. That's coming up on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your dentist to actually believe you?
And you're flossing every day.
Absolutely.
Great. And you're cutting down on your sweets?
Of course.
Wonderful. Then I don't even need to look in there.
Great. See you in 6 months.
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
Tomorrow we got to lighten it up. Tomorrow our homework is due. It was best sports movie since 2010. The movies that were drafted included Ford versus Ferrari, Moneyball, The Fighter, Warrior, and Creed. I still have 1.5 movies to go. I know Mike A still has something like 2 full movies.
How are you feeling about your rankings right now? You got a strong contender for 1 and 5?
I do. Yes. But it's too premature. I have 1.5 to go. I know who my leader is in the clubhouse, and I know who's bringing up the bottom as well. But, you know, got to let the other two play themselves out. They're all good, and I have some real suspicions about the way it's going to go. I do. I don't want to tip my hand because it could be self-defeating. But Yeah. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Which was the best? Which was the worst? That's going to happen tomorrow here on the Will Cain Show. Coming up in just a moment, I'm going to play some sound from Charles Barkley. When it comes to this Eyes of Texas debate and all these other debates, because it's going to keep moving, I think I said last week, what's next? To get our answer. Right now, by the way, it's Mike Gundy. It's happening as we speak. It's Oklahoma State head coach Mike Gundy. You know, where it's all going to go? Well, let's listen to Charles Barkley in just a moment. But first, let me hear from a couple of you. Andrew in Tennessee, I asked players or owners when it comes to Major League Baseball, who are you more sympathetic to? And you say who, Andrew?
I say the players, Will. The owners are going to – I feel like the kid who has his hand up in class and that in front of you answers your answer for you. You and Tim talked about, you know, the owners are really hurt themselves right now. And the players too, but the owners are more likely to recoup because they're going to be owners for years and years, where players are only going to have a small window.
I'm sorry, Andrew. Your phone line is no good. The kid in class has got his hand up, but I don't know. We can't hear what you're saying. Mike in Tennessee, what's up? I mean, Texas, what's up, Mike?
In Texas? Yes. Hey, what's going on, Will?
What's up?
I got a question, man. Got a couple things. You said that if your wife says she's offended and you give her, she gives you an answer on why and you don't believe it, you keep doing what you're doing. I feel like that's not right. Like, nobody who's married will continue to do what they're doing.
What if she says something
you
crazy,
want to say married.
Mike, for real though? Like, what if she says, what she says doesn't make any sense?
Then it doesn't matter. You're telling me you never had a situation to where, so you continue to make her mad anyway, or she does the same for you. If she feel like your response is like, well, I'm offended, and she says, why? And you say, well, because it is. She said, well, I don't believe it. I'm going to do what I want to do anyways. That's
well,
acceptable?
Mike, we can play around with the husband-wife analogy, right? We can do that. But
right.
Let's go ahead and take it back to the real issue here. What I'm saying just because you feel something doesn't make it real. It also doesn't make it – hold on, I'm not done. It also doesn't make it false, right? I'm not rejecting the validity of feelings. But what I'm saying is – if I look around, and I know you bring this up, Mike. I read a text from my buddy the other day when I asked a bunch of my friends about the Eyes of Texas this weekend. One of them says, not for me to define. I'm a white guy, and if the black players feel that way, then that's the way it is. And I said to him, no, man, there's an objective reality. There's a history to it as well. So we have to strive for the objective reality to make the decisions on, not the consensus of people's feelings, which, by the way, do change as well. The reality
does. That makes sense, but my second point would be, we need to change. You said, what's the end game? Do we change all the stuff from all the schools? Right. I don't see a problem with that. Why not? I mean, what is it going to hurt to change all of it? Because at the end of the day, we're trying to make a new change, make the world a better place. Change it all. There's nothing wrong with that. It won't hurt anything, but somebody's feelings are lit for 2 minutes, they'll get over it.
No,
and
that's,
I'm like,
that's
the end game is
Mike.
When it's all over and said and done. When we stop debating this stuff, that's the end game.
Okay,
people know more
and they
do more.
Okay, stay on the phone, okay? You had a lot you said there, so I want to see if I can answer a lot of those. I definitely think you have to identify an end game. I think it's the only way for real progress. I don't think the end game can be as broad as doing away with racism. Racism is something that we should be doing away with, and if this whole movement is a movement of hearts and minds, I hope it's successful, and I hope it can be something that wins hearts and minds. I don't think doing away with everything, as you said, is going to be a process of winning over hearts and minds, especially when it is, in my mind, things like the Eyes of Texas, which have very loose, if any, connections to our debate, objectively real racist past. What you'll do is turn off hearts and minds in that way. I think this has to be about more than hearts and minds as well. I think you have to have real, identifiable, achievable goals for this to be progress. And finally, Mike, and I'm going to hear from you one more time on this, I totally disagree, man. Like, history serves its purpose. Traditions serve their purpose. Ones that we can agree are rooted in racism and rooted in real problems in our history don't have to be maintained. I gave you my argument last week with the Confederate flag. But ones that have very weak arguments, you hold the history, man. It's who we are. You know what I mean? And it grounds us, and it helps us from repeating the same mistakes. You don't wipe it clean and start over with every new generation. Because you know what the next generation does? They'll wipe us clean too. I mean, were we all evil? We're not all good, but were we all evil?
Right. Not everybody's evil. But my thing is, I even look at it with just the laws of the country. Why not, if every 3,000 years you got to change them? There's nothing wrong with that if it goes for the better, in
every
my
3,000?
There's nothing wrong with changing. I say in 200 years, whatever. If you got to rewrite everything. so it can be a better normal for everybody.
But why do you trust that we're better? I mean, you think we're going to ride them? Then, you know what? What you're basically saying is it's good to have a little revolution every once in a while. I appreciate the call, Mike. The thing is, I believe there are certain principles that hold true from the beginning of humanity. And if we hold true to those principles, then we will achieve our highest state. And I do think a lot of those were enshrined in the United States Constitution. They were freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of association. They were the dignity, identity of each and every human being at an individual level, separate from his group, his race, his ethnicity, his gender, sexuality. Each individual man and woman has in and of himself worth to be recognized on an individual basis. And those truths were, I believe, which are eternal, were memorialized in our founding documents. I don't want the next generation to come along and wipe those clean because something new is here. Do we have parts of our society, culture, even laws that we do reinvent? Yes. That's why we elect congressmen every 2 years and senators every 6 years, governors every 4 years and presidents every 4 years. That's the opportunity for those kinds of change. But there are some things that are part of our past and part of our principles that ground us. And by the way, are eternal truths. And those you don't wipe clean. Not every 200 years, not every decade, not every 2 years. We're venturing into that territory. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Charles Barkley, Andrew Call is coming up on the Will Cain Show.
Will Cain, huge fan. I am unsure how the executive at ESPN let someone who is so unequivocally wrong all of the time host their own show on the air.
You want to be heard? Call the Will Cain Show now, 888-SAY-ESPN.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your goldfish to sing Bizet's Carmen? There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
You are the reason why I changed the station. I started listening to classical music. Will Cain, you're garbage. Get out of here.
Don't agree with Will? Not sure how that could happen. Call 888-SAY-ESPN now.
I actually have a lot today I wanted to talk to you about that we didn't get to. We're going to get to it tomorrow. Ohio State required its players to all sign a coronavirus waiver. I spoke to University of Tennessee Athletic Director Phil Fulmer today and asked him if Tennessee would be asking their athletes to sign a similar waiver. He said no. I'll play you that sound. I've got a lot to get into tomorrow. Which I can't wait to be back here in about, what would it be, 21 hours from now. It's Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. This is Shower Sessions, part interview, part concert, all from the shower. Grammy winner St. Vincent invites up-and-coming artists to sing, share, and get funky, all in the sound booth of the home. The shower. Watch now at youtube.com/progressive. Remember I said a week ago, with the way this stuff is going, you can just see the logical progression of you have to speak out. If you speak out, you have to say just the right thing, you know, and if you don't, then the truth is, I mean, every day there's a new cancellation. Today it's Mike Gundy. Yesterday was the Eyes of Texas. Before that it was Drew Brees. Will it get to the point where if you do not kneel during the national anthem, then you are part of the problem? I'm not the only one who's brought that up. Charles Barkley, former NBA player, was on Get Up this morning. Listen to this.
You know, Greener, this is a very slippery slope, I think, because does it make you a bad guy if you don't kneel? Because if you go back and look at Colin Kaepernick, there was only like 30 players kneeling with him. Did that make all those other black guys bad guys? I just think this is a very slippery slope. I think if you want to kneel, bless you. Thank you for the protest. But I don't think you're a bad guy because, like I said, even you going back to Drew Brees, he said what the flag meant to him. It's going to mean something different to everybody. But like I say, it does not make you a bad guy if you don't kneel, in my opinion. But if you want to kneel, we thank you for the support.
I'm telling you, that's going to happen this season. I do think kneeling will be very common practice in the NFL, at least for a while, and there will be questions drawn of guys who do not kneel. They'll have to answer for that. That's how this will flip. And is that the right place we want to go as well? Is that progress? That's the question every step of the way. Is this progress or is this going backwards? For example, no, I don't want to – this is too out of context for me. Is there anything more you can give me on what Michael Bennett told the Daily Beast?
All right.
You there, Nuno?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry about that.
What is this? I need more than this. What did he say?
So Michael he was Bennett. Talking about the letter, right? And he said, Goodell saying that Black Lives Matter is almost like a slap in the face. Bennett said, Black talent has been exploited at a high level in the NFL. He knows Black Lives Matter because without Black players, the NFL wouldn't be as lucrative as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then he ended it with saying that if you're supporting him, then your letter is really null and void.
Who's him? President Trump?
President Trump, yes.
So he's saying whatever the NFL said is worthless if he supports President Trump. So in the end, what I'm, you know, kneel, statement, say all the right things. Is it signing up for a political agenda? Is it the end, like, vote the way I vote? Think the way I think exactly? Is that what this is about? I don't have much time, but I want to take both these guys who've been on hold. So, Andre, you've been on hold for a long time, but you got to keep it pretty short, man. What's up?
What's going on, Will? Thanks for taking my call. To the point, don't agree with the cancel culture at all, not one bit. And I feel the further and further we go away from the center, we're going to alienate that center. And that's how you lose ball games. Again, in my view, it's about consensus and making the argument. But if you want to make that decision for folks, which makes them irate, then it's just going to swing the pendulum the other way. In conclusion, you got to get somebody
totally
else.
Agree with this that.
It's Invictus. Remember Invictus, folks. We're missing the point. Nelson Mandela. Let them keep the green gold because we have to figure out how to live together at the end of the day. Remember that example mm-hmm. when we're in this moment, folks. Thanks for the time.
Really good, Andre. Really good. Thank you. And Adam in Florida, you're on the Will Cain Show.
Hey, Will, man. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to, like, broad picture it real quick and say I know it feels like a lot of things are being canceled. I'm not 100% on the cancel culture of everything. But I will say earlier, I think you said, like, a lot of things are on the country was built on a lot of great things and great principles written in the Constitution. You have to remember at that time, those things that were only great for white people. Only.
Hey, Adam, I never forget that. But we're going to run short on time, Adam. I'll just say that doesn't make the principles wrong. That means we failed in our application. Don't divorce yourself from the principles. Refasten yourself to them.
That's fair. I mean, I don't disagree with you at all. I think you're right. We have to refashion them. But we're just at a point in time where the it's so strong and we've reached such a breaking point that, yes, we've reached the far other extreme. But in life, how do you find balance without experiencing the extremes?
We have to. Reasonable. Adam, I'm going to run out of time. I appreciate the call. That's what we're trying to do here, man. We're trying to appeal to not just the better nature of everyone, but our reason. That's why. You don't, like Andre said, want that pendulum swinging the other way either. Reason, bring us together.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to The Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.